So, what shall we look at this evening?
Looking at a way in which my spouse and I communicate, and it happened shortly before coming here, and we're just dealing with a lot of the same issues I was dealing with last week, and a lot of physical stuff, and we've had the addition of her mother. We're not sure if we need to get her a cognitive test for possible early dementia or whether it's in depression. Anyway, the point we got in our conversation was just felt very much like comparing like who had the worst week.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed something when I feel like I wasn't being supported in what I was expressing of I'm not going to have any more needs. Like I just... And more than that, I wish I could just go back in time and not have any needs 5 minutes ago. And that's very familiar to me. Feels very young.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is right now, don't have any feelings or have any needs. At some point, we'll figure it out, right? But there's this obvious, like...
Yeah, so there's a conversation happening and there's an escalation, it feels like, in who can trump the other person in the...
Little bit.
In the worst kind of...
Little bit, yeah.
But what you're noticing in that conversation is a process for you that's familiar, which is, okay, well, clearly what we're doing here is not about support. I don't know what we're doing here, but what I feel is I'm supported. And as soon as that experience happens for me, it's a very young experience,
mm-hmm.
the reaction is to, okay, withdraw, not going to have any needs, let's just shut down. In fact, if we could only rewind this conversation, but basically the desire to completely withdraw from the interaction, because the ongoing interaction is just making you feel less supported.
Well, there's also... What it just dropped in is that there's some beating going on there too, because they're like, if the wrong, I don't quite how to express it, if the wrong sort of, if I'm not getting what I projected that I wanted out of it, then I'm a bad person for having the feeling.
Yeah. So to have a need is bad.
Yes, yes.
So you're aware at the first level of the ego takeover, right? In the sense of, so here you are expressing what you think, you're talking about the content of your day.
Right.
What you're expecting is some validation.
Yeah.
Right? Some support, expression of support. It doesn't feel like you're getting it in the way you expected it.
Right.
At that juncture, is it available to you? There's so many things about this term.
So much. Yeah, no, right?
There are a couple of ways to practice with it. So the first thing before we break that down would be to go pick up the recorder. Because there's some way in which if the need's not being met here, He needs to talk about the need not getting met and for the need to get met here, right? Mm-hmm. That is the place where we point everybody to in terms of getting what it is that they need expressed, to express what you need and then to receive it. Because
right.
It's here that gets taken care of, right? So that would be the first place I would, even before you, after you leave group, to just pick up the recorder and get used to being able to work with the person who feels unsupported and whose only option is to exit the conversation and not have any needs and be told he's bad for having them.
Yeah, as I said, and again, like you said, there's so many levels, like, I don't know who is expert or who is saying what or from what aspect of what personality and all that stuff like that. I have no idea. It just feels like me.
Yes.
It just feels
exactly.
Like
so that would be the first place to start to work with it, because many levels, right? So right. One level is we always say in practice that no one's ever going to meet our need.
Right.
Because what is keeping that in place is going to actively sabotage it, even if the other person was. Right? Otherwise, mm-hmm. that experience that you're having, that karmic reaction that you're a bad person for having needs and needs are wrong, cannot be maintained. That's why the work is here. That's why you need to... That poor guy, that young guy, can't show up in a conversation with your wife.
Right.
Right? But unless you know him, unless he gets to know you, and you have a relationship in which he knows that he doesn't have to get it from your wife, that he can get it from you.
Yeah.
Right? Then there is that whenever the conditioning will make sure that he shows up and won't get his needs met and will then be told he's a bad person and that the karma of your needs are wrong, having needs is wrong, is going to be maintained.
Right, so it's almost like this content comes up and conditioning is like, let's put this guy up front.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Let's put this guy up front. And that's the way we'll keep the karma going. Right?
Okay.
And so that poor guy has never had anyone listen to him, support him, meet his needs. And so that's what he's going to experience when he's put out there in a conversation like that. And so the first place to work with that is here. You get to talk to him. You get to interview him. You get to see what is going on for him, what he needs, what his ideal support looks like. What would it mean for him to feel supported? What would be the words?
Mm-hmm.
Right? How would you like to be heard? How would you like to be reflected? How would you like to be supported? He's never been asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been listened to.
Yeah.
So that would be my first level of encouragement, because the second place to practice with this is much, much more high level. And it requires that need doesn't get met from the outside. So once we work with this guy, there's a way in which you can recognize when he's around. Have the conversation that he needs to have. Take care of him so that he's not going to be the person who's having that discussion.
Yeah.
Right? Someone who is present.
Choose somebody else for the job.
That's exactly right. Choose someone else for the job.
Yeah.
Because what's not available to you or to the situation when he's under duress is the ability for whoever's there to say something to the effect of, actually, you know, this isn't taking us in a direction that we want to go. So let's not have, I need to go take care of myself. How about we both take care of ourselves and come back when we are ready to have this conversation and when we've both not had such bad days. Right? Your ability to facilitate her, your ability to just say, you know, what would be really nice right now is if you just said, I had a bad day, and I'm happy to say that for you. I've had a really bad week, and you've had one too. How about we go just take a break?
Right.
That level of practicing with it, where you can facilitate her or you can facilitate yourself, is not yet available. I mean, that would be the second level to practice with after you've taken care of it here.
Yeah, well, it strikes me in that is that... when I'm identified with being a victim, not a lot of opportunities or options are...
There are none.
...are available.
Right, you know, because all of your attention, all of this human being's attention is being taken listening to a barrage of voices that you're not even aware of. Right? You know that there's the beating about having needs. But if you process map that conversation with her, you could actually put down everything the voices are saying to get you to the place of exit. Let's get out of here. Let's rewind here. This is not going the way I need it to go. I don't feel supported. I've got to get out. Right? Now, A high-level mastery place to practice with it is if you're present enough to know what's going on for you, you could say to her, you know what? I'm getting really identified. I'm being told that I'm not feeling supported here, which I know is not what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know what? Let me just go take care of myself. And, or what would help me right now is if you could just reflect me a little bit, then I'll reflect you, and then we'll talk about the content.
Yeah.
Right? We're not allowed... The presence to talk about my process is not available until I know my process. Because you could say, what would support me would be, rather than talk about your day or talk about... That's the ego version, right? I'm talking about what's going on for me on a content level, and she's talking about what's going on for us on a content level, and both of us are looking for support, but both of us are super identified with what's going on for me without being able to get out of it and ask for what would be supportive, because you don't know that.
That's what I was going to say. Point of view, there's just sort of retreat.
Yes,
there
right.
is, well, okay, I guess that was wrong.
Yeah, and that's the person you want to work with.
Yeah.
Because when you're clear what he needs and you've given it to him, you may or may not need it from her.
Yeah.
Right? Or you might be able to say, okay, well, what would be helpful for me now is, because you've talked to him.
Right.
And you can ask for what you want.
Yeah.
But at least you know what you want.
Yeah, I know enough to know that it has very little to do with her.
That's
and
right.
has very much to do with the situation and now who's put
That's
into
exactly.
the... I never really sort of pictured it that ego would kind of choose the right person for the job, depending on the circumstance.
Well, it never would. Otherwise, you
no, no, no. But that's, I'm saying the right person for ego.
Oh, right.
You know,
absolutely.
The right
Always.
Victim, the right Always. Person to put out there to get hit, so it keeps going. That's very helpful. I didn't.
Yeah, I think Sherry said it on the show. Right, we're always—it's a heat-seeking missile.
Uh-huh.
The most suffering that it can—that it can—it knows exactly. And saying it knows makes it sound volitional, right? The system is created. Experientially, we have this experience that the wrong person is always there for the job, because that's what would result in the maximum suffering.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? And the maintenance of the karma. If you think of it as a karma maintaining machine, it has every trick in the book in order to maintain itself. And we know that that's what happens. We're not allowed to... So you can tell, right? Every time we have this kind of conversation in this kind of circumstance, that person has that experience and gets shut down. So what is the karma that's maintained? You should not have needs.
Yeah.
You're a bad person if you have it.
Yeah.
So don't open your mouth. And in communication, it really, really separates us from the people we love.
Right.
Right? Because here's the person you love, who you've chosen to live your life with, and there isn't the ability to be authentic with yourself in her presence, let alone be authentic with her.
Right. Yeah, it's a double whammy.
Completely double whammy.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you look at any situation in which who wins, if it's you, the authentic human being, then there's presence. If it's not, it's an ego payoff. And the first place we want to look is how it's running that game on us.
Yeah.
So we can bring awareness to that process and watch it. First place, watch it, work with the person caught in it to get a complete clarity around how the suffering's being maintained for that human being. Not to fix it or change it, just paying attention to the way in which it happens. Because unless you bring presence to it, you're not going to know that you're heading into that cul-de-sac.
No, it feels like a surprise.
Absolutely. Every single time.
Yeah. And the other, just another part that drops in too is, and I'll, you know, like in this case, and I won't have feelings and needs again. Like decision to be perfect.
Exactly. Which is
a total, it's just that.
Stressful, right? I'm not going to have any needs.
Right.
But, okay, well, this and the stress of life begins to build. And then you go unconscious. The person shows up in the identification, and wham, the cycle just breaks.
I can completely see that process. Regarding recording and listening, I've also watched myself, or where a beating has come in, is you can't even do, 20, 30 seconds at night. Like, I feel like I wanted to stay in bed this week. Kids have to go to school. There's not even 30 seconds to do that. But one thing I've heard is, maybe immediately after I leave tonight.
Yeah.
To
sit in the car for 5 minutes and do the recording. Do the two-handed with him.
Yeah.
Just put yourself in that, back in that conversation and allow him to talk. What would he have wanted? Well, how could it have gone differently? What did he wish that he had received?
Yeah.
And just listen to him. Not even if it doesn't occur to you to finish the two-handed and see what arises to offer. He's never been heard. Mm-hmm. That's what his feeling is. I'm not being heard here. That's why he doesn't feel supported. His perspective is not allowed.
That's a very good way of putting it, because it feels like it's not allowed, it's not even allowed to look at.
Yeah.
What I can feel is a different sort of, rather than, wanting to fix this person, is I'm really curious about what this person has to say.
That's exactly right. That's the attitude of mind which will invite him to come.
Yeah.
Because if you invite him to be fixed, he's likely not to show up. It's like, it's another rejection, right?
Yeah.
That's what the two-handed is about. It's the person who wants to listen to him, who thinks he's worth it, who loves him unconditionally, right? And is really curious about, it's like if you have one of your kids, something happened to you, you just sit down and go, okay, tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because half of the healing is in just being listened to. To know that someone will want to hear what you have to say and is on your side, no matter what.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And don't be surprised if he doesn't show up when you get into the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? You just have to wait and ask.
Okay.
And if it's not this situation, then is there another situation where you felt your needs were not met? And see if you can drop into that experience.
Mm.
Because the fact, he doesn't know you. He doesn't trust you. You've never had his back before. So it's a relationship you're going to have to cultivate.
I see.
Right? Mm. So not to give up on him.
Right, right, right. But knowing too that the circumstances come around.
Yeah.
This person is put out there.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Jen.
That was really helpful. Mm. I've been in I've been in an intense workshop with, it's a whole combination of things. My practice for the behavior change, which is, the stopping three times and looking at the perfection of the moment and how that's affected the other part of the workshop. My mom, who's 98, and there's been some issues with her care. And similarly to what was just talked about, whenever I go into situations where I have to be the one to talk, and I'm always the one representing the family, and it's just the way it's been, there's a... I don't even know how to characterize it. Just a nervousness, a tension, I don't want to do this, but I've been working with that like I've never worked with it before, in recording and listening, two-handed. And then with the behavior practice, what I got to see, which sort of was stunning, is that even this, that all the sensations, everything that it's almost like cellularly believed that there's something wrong is not possible when I'm doing those recordings.
Yeah.
And because I'm in the midst of dealing with this situation for the last two, three days, and I'm doing those recordings, it's like they come right up against each other, and it's, well, it isn't even against, it's when I'm doing the recordings that that can't be real. Mm-hmm. That old pattern can't, I want to say can't survive, even though all the sensations, mm-hmm. all the stories, it's all there. It's almost as though the picture screen has been enlarged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not over it, for sure, in that there's a lot more to see. I can tell that.
Yeah.
But it's just been sort of amazing to get a glimpse of that. I hope that
makes sense. Let me just reflect what you're saying, right? So there's the intense circumstances. There's an issue with your mom's care. And what I project you're pointing to there is that kind of situation produces an identification.
Definitely.
Right? Which is characterized for you by anxiety and tension and nervousness and a resistance to having to deal with it.
And having to get it just right.
And having to get it just right, which is what I project the stress is on your and your type, right? That this has to go perfectly and all of the pressure is on this person. And you've practiced enough to practice with that in many ways. The two-handed recording, just with recording and listening to support the person who is going to have to do this really, really hard thing for her, right? And the experience of having this workshop and working with this identification or this pattern of suffering, let's say, along with having to record, along with the behavior change of recording three times a day on the perfection of the moment, is allowing you to have a perspective that includes that workshop, however intense it is, in a container of awareness. That there is nothing wrong with feeling that way and having to work through it.
Yes, and even, I was going to say more than that, in that it's just embraced.
It's
that
embraced.
That whole situation is embraced, and yeah, this is really hard, and there are no answers, obvious, and it could get really ugly, and you know, many of it.
Yes.
And that's part of life.
It is.
But it isn't, that makes it almost sound like...
It's not resignation.
No, not at all.
And it's not aversion. It's a true acceptance of how it is.
And it's so, what's amazing about it for this enneagram is that, how to say it, there's no winning. You don't have to win. You don't have to get it right because we're going into this, the different perspective is going into it with, we're going to be as self-aware, as present with the mentor in these conversations as is at all possible.
Yes.
Before, during, and after.
Yes.
And in that sense, there can be no losing.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So two things about that, right, Jan? I think that is the victory from practice. When the awareness is, when we're aware of, no matter what happens, I can be with what is, because I am with the conscious, compassionate awareness that is with me.
Yeah, and it's also, well, with that in mind, it's like a roller coaster, though, of the huge sensations and conversation going on. That I just have to stay with, yes.
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I would say that goes to my second point, which is the holy idea of the one, is holy perfection.
Mm.
With how it is, not how I am in it.
Thank you.
Right? That's the difference.
Just takes it off, though.
Right. When we can slide into the universe is operating perfectly, including horrid sensations, the love of the mentor, circumstances that could go anyway. But what I'm with is only this moment in love. Okay. It goes back to your last month's practice. When you're the instrument, you don't get to choose what goes through you.
Yes, and I just can't believe all that's come out of this year with that, and it's almost like bringing it to a point where, I mean, conditioning is kicking so hard right now, because
it seems to be going around, Jen. There is. I mean, everybody I've talked to in the last couple of days has had a lot more karma come at them than usual.
I think because we're seeing so much. I mean, that's all. I mean, I'm just sort of blown away. I mean, in the good sense of the mind being blown, you don't have, you know, the thinking doesn't hold up.
Yeah. As you said, the old patterns have to disintegrate.
Yeah.
And that is that's a crucible experience. Right, it's awareness transformation experience, rather than being beaten, whichever one of the various spiritual heroes metaphors we want to use.
Yeah. Well, there's just one other thing, and this one just, again, it's stunning to me, but it's no surprise given everything else. In all this, I had a conversation with my partner, and he took huge offense at something I said. And I as clearly, as compassionately as that I could, I said, that's not what I meant at all. And I clarified it, and he was still really angry. And I said, well, you know, and I said, one more try. I said, okay. It was the first time, I think, ever, 100%, I mean, meaning it wasn't just a partial, where I got to see that it had nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
I've never seen, I mean, sure, he's always said that. And it's at the beginning of this year is what I started with, about where I get most stuck. Mm-hmm. And here we are at the end of the year, and I had this experience. It only took a year.
Yeah. That's amazing, actually.
Well, no, I mean, there's been a lot of practice, but I just... Oh,
yes, it has.
That's what she was pointing to.
Yes.
Yeah.
That his experience is his experience, and if we don't take it personally... That is, we don't make it about me, which is so hard to see in close and intimate relationships that have gone on for a really long time, right? Because it's so automatic.
Yeah.
We play that dance together so perfectly, right? And so just to go, So I was having this conversation with somebody at East West who had trust issues, right? No matter what I do, if I've broken your trust, you're never going to trust me again. Even if I'm the most trustworthy person. But I get to know that I'm being completely trustworthy. You're the one who has a story about my untrustworthiness.
Yeah.
So it's a very wise moment when we get to, I can't do anything to change your experience because I wasn't the author of it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? I said it, I clarified, and I have to walk away. Otherwise, ego wins. Because it gets to you, too.
That was a critical part. But it was also very clear.
Yeah. And
it was also very clear that there was nothing more to say.
That's right.
And there was something else. But I don't know. It feels like the miracles just are... I don't mean just here, but... In the radio show, just everything that Sangha members are seeing and acting on or not is
we just feel grateful.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Phil.
Well, here's my workshop. Yeah. That's the same kind of feeling that, whoa, where is all this coming from? You know, that something has ratcheted up. Everything. And okay, so this was about, you know, a company supposed to have delivered something at a certain time, and instead it came at a different time, and nobody, because it goes to the province center, nobody was available, nobody was there late at night, And then I found out later, because I had called, and they said, oh, don't worry, it'll come Monday. And it didn't, and so I called again, and what had happened is the driver had decided to send it back to the, you know, the seller. So, and I had to buy it all over again if So, but the conversation that, and which was now costing more. I just kept at the conversation, but I felt myself getting very frustrated because I thought, well, let's, what about this? You know, what about that? And nothing was working. You know, these poor people on the phone can't do anything. You know, they just try to be really nice. And but the interesting thing was, and this went on for lots of different conversations, actually, for whatever reason, I had to call them 3 or 4 times. And they were all very polite. But what I was getting in trouble for was that I not only was frustrated, that was not the problem. I sounded frustrated to the people, you know. And at the time, I was either just there or just completely conditioned. I have no idea what, having these conversations. But afterwards, okay, then came the, you know, the how frustrated I sounded, and so I thought, I just will look at this first. Let me just look at this. So I was looking at all the different pieces of karma. All right, the one is, the first one that always comes up is the same thing. I wanted this fixed, and it couldn't be fixed. You know, I had to follow what they wanted me to do, or that was, you know.
Yeah. And it's Andre on the radio show, right?
Yeah.
Bureaucracy is egocentricity on steroids.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. And so it couldn't be fixed, but I wanted it fixed, and that's kind of a motive. Something's broken, if the car's out of whack, if, you know, whatever. So it must be just a piece of karma that it's just, I'm not, you know, conditioning's not happy, tries to make me unhappy until it's fixed, it's back to normal.
So several things about that on many different levels, right? So one quick question about that, Phil. Do you know what's under the karma? What are you told will be what you cannot stand if it didn't get fixed? Like, what's the implied threat?
So I'm feeling that, and then I'm saying to myself, what's under that? And that might be the first time I really asked that question. And what came up was, no surprise, this is not how it's supposed to be. It's not fair, and I don't have a big fairness issue, but it was there, it's under there. It's not fair, and basically it shouldn't be this way and something's wrong.
Right. Which to me is still at the layer of the voices.
Yeah, it is.
Right, and so that might be a good place to do a two-handed around, is what happens to the person if she cannot fix it?
I could go a lot of different directions.
But I think it's like what we're talking about with Tim. There's something going on. So it just could be a vanilla ego process, which is wanting it to be different than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or control, right? I have to be controlled.
Yeah, control is part of it.
But we're under control. So for me, where I go to on an emotional level is delving down under control for me is, what I'm told is, I will not be able to deal with what happens. Unpredictability is so unsafe for me that if I don't know what's going to happen, then the level of anxiety that I'm going to experience is something I will not be able to stand. But it took me years to be able to get down to that level of, when my control freak kicks in, it's because there's unpredictability in the environment and I'm avoiding getting in touch with my anxiety.
Yeah, that certainly could be part of, when you're asking that question though, I wonder if, and I don't know if this is still on the upper level, but it was like, I get, yeah, because I've had, years past where, especially when I was working as an administrative assistant and had to do everything right, if things like the printer would go off right in the middle of a very stressful
timing,
had to get it done, and it was for somebody else, I watch myself just get really, you know, close to, and I never get panic attacks, but people might call that, you know.
And so another place for that is, I actually recognize that very young, very, very young, this is a Marianne Milner thing, that if we grew up thinking we are the only thing in the world, right?
Right.
Then you encounter something that is different than yours, and we don't have the ability to realize that it's not mutually exclusive. If I have a thought that's different from yours, mm-hmm. and for some reason your thought survives mine, I die. That's a level of survival that mm-hmm. you can get in touch with. That's the, another place for it, in terms of unpredictability, right? At an interface of two different perspectives, only one of us is going to survive. That's what makes that interface a life and death situation. Mm-hmm. So it will be an interesting process to go, what's under that? What's under that?
And
what's under that?
Part of it,
on an emotional level.
Because part of it is, because it keeps coming, is it's just proof, maybe, that I'm not good enough.
Right.
That
yeah,
I can't do anything right. You know, all that kind of.
That's
that,
right.
That level of.
And it's worth talking to her.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like, what does she feel? And what really would change her orientation? That it's truly at the bottom of the well. Because it's at the root of the root of the root of the root of every piece of karma that's on top of it.
Yeah. That's interesting. Very interesting. And just the last part of that was after, you know, I didn't get down that level, but I was, okay, at the level where, you know, the voices wanted to keep chirping up, so I knew I couldn't entertain those.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it was that night or maybe the next night, I don't even remember, but I was, you know, going to, I was getting ready to do the recording, and so what dropped in is, I was going to record, so I don't know what day it was. This was really a hard day, or I was not at the top of my game, and all of a sudden, and I thought, wait a minute. So I just stopped and breathed a little bit. Excuse me. And this had gone on all day, that whenever I, because it was just one of those low kind of days, probably from the night, that other interaction. And I said, you know, every time I stopped in today to take a look, I felt really good.
Yeah.
So even that was a made-up story. Yeah. I wasn't on the, you know, low. It just wanted me to think I was.
Right. Yeah. And so what you're saying is a redirect of attention is possible in that moment. When whatever happened in that day, in that moment, you could always come to what went well.
Yeah, because I knew during the day I wasn't always feeling the way I was kind of feeling.
Yeah. So it wants to have the last word, and you caught it in that process.
Yeah.
Right? And just redirected back to, well, actually, I was paying attention the whole day, and I had a good time.
I was feeling good the whole day.
Yeah.
So it's just so interesting. You know,
there are two other things that dropped in while you were talking. One of them was my favorite line from this email class, mm-hmm. where I think Sherry was talking to a five, which is why I remember it, is something to the effect of how we're conditioned to believe that nobody else can handle our energy.
Well, that's interesting, huh?
Right. Because those customer service reps are trained to listen to your frustration. They're completely adequate to facilitate anybody.
Yeah, they were great.
Right?
Yeah.
But the conditioning that we have is, I have to repress, because I'm told that my energy is too big to handle.
Huh.
And so just something to be aware of, two things actually, and Cherry said this on the morning show also, I think it was to Carol, about you're taking responsibility for your experience. You want to go look at the karma of it, you mm-hmm. want to get to the bottom of it, because there's a way in which you want to be kind in all mm-hmm. of those interactions. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like you're licensed to take the gun out and explode all over everybody. Mm-hmm. A person who's concerned about how kind they are in an interaction mm-hmm. is unlikely to go off the edge, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not that you don't want to take responsibility for your experience, but there's this other place to explore as to why you're not allowed to have your energy because somebody else can't handle it. The only caveat that Sherry's ever put on a high energy situation is to take ownership of my experience. You're not saying you're idiots and that's not what you're saying. I'm frustrated. I'm really, really upset that it's not going my way. The line I used with a customer service representative today was, it's such a pleasure to serve you. What can I do for you today? And I said, I'm hungry and pissed. Right?
Yeah.
And he said, I'm so sorry to hear that. I said, I'm glad you're sorry to hear that because I'm not going to get to eat. Because you don't deliver, because if the delivery, I didn't say you, I said the delivery isn't on time.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah. And he said, I'm really sorry, is there anything I can do? And I laughed and I said, not unless you can get my food delivered in the next 10 minutes. Right?
Yeah.
I wasn't yelling at him, I wasn't yelling at his company, I wasn't yelling at the restaurant, I wasn't yelling at anybody.
Yeah.
But I can have that high level of energy of my experience because it's true for me.
Well, I'm glad you said that because that's kind of how I was operating. I was just feeling, having that high energy and it was coming through my voice.
That's right.
I wasn't mad at them. I wasn't, it wasn't their fault. I even said, I know this isn't your fault, but isn't there something you can do?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I had lots of experience dealing with bureaucracies, especially in this job.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a double whammy because I'm a representative of practice.
Right.
Right? And so the level of self-hate, if I lose it, is good to practice with.
Yeah.
But I have had so much experience of being able to know that escalation in my voice
mm-hmm.
and to realize that what I'm dealing with is, what I'm really frustrated by is egocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not required not to be frustrated by egocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not required to tolerate, so just like we would say, you don't have to tolerate somebody else's identification.
Yeah.
Right? If someone's being abusive because they're super identified, you can go, sorry, and walk out.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If I'm dealing with the bureaucracy of egocentricity, then we all get often, there is an authentic frustration with, I don't have to get identified.
Right.
But I can still be frustrated at something that is unintelligent.
Right. And see, I didn't know if I was identified or not. I may not have been because as soon as I get out of a certain realm, conditioning will say
that's exactly right.
I
call customer service only because I actually look forward to it as a workshop because I really want to develop my skill
mm-hmm.
of being able to own my experience,
mm-hmm.
not be pseudo kind or repressed mm-hmm. or anything, just own my experience skillfully.
Yes.
I could say, I've watched Sherry do this 1,000 times, and she'd laugh and say, I know it's not your fault, but just forgive me, I really am pissed.
Yeah, I said that to one guy. I didn't say that, but I said something like that, I know it's not your fault, but, that same kind of thing.
Right. And they can facilitate you.
Yeah, and the last lady I talked to was a step up. And she actually kind of resolved it. So, but even before she did, as soon as she came on the line, I could see this whole switch in me. She had this beautiful accent.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally said, where are you from? And I thought that she was somewhere here, from somewhere. But she says, I'm in South Africa. And I said, oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
She said, you have? But I could, her accent switched me because it was so It was familiar. I know that accent. You know, it's kind of something like Teresa's, and anyhow, that interaction went very differently. But also, she was doing something that could at least level off the playing field a little bit.
Right, and to me, that's a beautiful place, right? Because we have experienced where someone wants to reach out and pull you out of the identification, and the ego is going so... Ego does not want us to let go. And so we sit there like that. Mm-hmm. But as soon as... And this is, again, quoting Sherry again, right? She's not confused between ego and authenticity.
Yeah.
And the authenticity in us will respond to the authenticity. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when the olive branch was offered, you were ready. However, whether she offered it or life offered it, in order for that connection to be a much more collaborative process, it was available and you stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you never get any credit for that.
That's right. I didn't just think of it that way until right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing I didn't, that I noticed, and this is the last part, because so it was being delivered again, and I saw it was on the same trajectory as supposed to come at 8 p.m. And so I called somebody, and this guy had told me that one of these said, "I will call you, and we'll be able tell the deliverer, blah blah blah." Well, he never called me.
Of course not.
No.
So how many times has Campora driven down that dirt road without ever telling the monastery that the gas is being delivered?
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing. And so I called them again and asked the lady, "How come?" Blah 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 blah, and she didn't know it was going to be a, you know, hit and miss. And so I got to the place where I was like, you know what? If it comes, that means you wanted me to have it. If it doesn't come, that means you don't. And I don't really care.
But
the truth is, I probably didn't even need it in the first place. It was something for an emergency.
Yeah.
We haven't had any.
Well, and that's what we have to get to, right?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, in the spiritual sense of this, the thing that the intelligence that animates often wants us to learn is you're not in control.
Yeah.
You just can't orchestrate, in this realm, you can't orchestrate it to make it go your way.
No, you can't.
So you just have to surrender to, it will either go your way or it won't go your way, and you'll take the next step.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to, but as a matter of fact, right, a little bit before it was time to come, I looked and it had been delivered and signed for me. So, I thought, well, I guess you wanted me to have it.
That's right. Well, because... just a small point there, right, Phil? Again, what Sherry says about the person who's late for the first appointment has shown you who they are. Don't be surprised when they're late every single time, right?
Uh-huh.
So you can tell that these people, so the Campora truck is not going to call you, no matter how often the appointment guy tells you that the Campora driver will call you.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It happens 300 times, and we're still expecting it to go differently.
Right. Why didn't they call?
Right. Why didn't they call? Or they should have called, or let's make sure they call, or let's give them the right telephone number. And so there's a way in which the egocentric systems are going to operate egocentrically.
Yeah.
And part of the way we're set up is to believe that it can be different.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Till we learn, no, it can't.
Yeah, it can't.
You know, and so then I either have to wait at 8 o'clock in front of that place, or get to the place that you get to, which is I've done my best.
Right.
And then
because it was tonight, I wasn't going to be at 8 o'clock.
Or I'm willing to go through that same rigmarole all over again.
Yeah. Wasn't worth it.
Exactly. And in some senses, that's how ego gets us, right? We get so tired of dealing with the systems, we just cave.
Yeah. But this wasn't a cave.
It was a choice.
A true choice. It was like, this means I don't need it.
That's right. Exactly.
I mean, because if it was something that I really needed, it was life and death, I had to have it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I needed it for something, then I would keep moving.
Exactly. And you know that, yeah. Right? You know that.
Yeah.
It's not a place. The choice that you really made is, I choose not to suffer anymore.
Yeah, it just didn't matter anymore. This particular piece wasn't, and I knew it wasn't a resignation because I felt really good.
Yeah, because when we choose not to suffer, we're surrendering to life. There's no control there.
Right. Yeah, because the other way you just feel kind of down, like you were defeated or something.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
For fun. Thank you. Beth.
So I was listening to Alan Watts and recording, and he said something along the lines of, babies get it. You put your hands up and you're hidden, and then you go like this, and the baby laughs, and then you go like this, and then they laugh. They get it. It's a game of hide and seek. Sorry. That wasn't self-explanatory. Anyway.
No, I get that. I get it.
Sorry. So what I was seeing was, you know, I think exactly what we're experiencing in practice, it's that game of hide and seek. Sometimes I'm identified and sometimes I'm not. You know, sometimes I act out this way and sometimes, you know, there's this option or this opportunity. And it just becomes this really fun game of, I can just laugh at it. I can just laugh at everything. Okay, maybe not, you know, guffaw, but like kind of go, yeah, you know, yeah, that's the universe has a sense of humor.
Mm.
Yeah. Is how I'm coming to experience it more and more, not letting ego categorize it in the ways that it loves to categorize it, or not loves, but a way that it was programmed to categorize it for.
Well, let's see if I can reframe that, right? That, because what I project, there's a shift in the orientation, right? Where the practice allows you to have the perspective of it's a game more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
In order for that perspective to develop,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes, as in Jan's case, you can have that perspective when it's not fun,
right?
When there's identification,
right?
Or right. And that perspective simply is the knowledge that there's nothing wrong with how it is,
right?
Right, because it's just a game. And most of the time, we identify so seriously as being one of the players that you can't see that it's a game.
Right, and the place when I project that I'm identified is the place where it's this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, it's eclipsed. I can't see, you know, I can't see. I'm just locked in this bubble. But the minute it goes open and the hands are away from the face and, you know, you go, oh.
Yeah.
You know, I recognize that. That's yeah.
And the more we do that, the more we can see that it's not wrong for this. This
exactly.
is not wrong.
But because it's part of the game.
Because it's part of the game.
Because it's just how it's happening. And it actually makes this fun. I mean, it's like, oh my God, there it is, there it is.
Well, and then if you follow the Alan Watts through, then when you go like this, what you really see is it's not the universe that has a sense of humor, but you're the universe that has this sense of humor. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. So I was in Manhattan for the last several days, and it was magical. It had this quality to it of just allowing myself to just be there without all of the old memories or the old expectations or the I've got to make it a certain way. You know, I bought a theater ticket and then my friend couldn't make dinner on the one night, so we switched it to the theater night. I tried everything I could to switch it wasn't going to work, and it was like, I'm here to visit my friends, you know, that's it. And just had, you know, a lovely evening, and things just kept working out, but not in a way like I had planned it to work out that way, but it truly is that unfolding, that like it's just unfolding and I'm just there. It's what we've talked about so many times, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, take the step and it, the floor appears, or
well, very present.
It was just this, yeah, this place. And then there were times when I would feel the conditioned story start to come in and want to really hook me. And so it was fun in that way of like, okay, the body sensation I'm feeling is this. Okay, the I'm starting to feel bad. Mm. You know, the okay, like it was like the process map showed up kind of right in front of me of like, where am I in the site? Okay, and you know, and the ability, like Sherry's offered, is to back it up, like to not end up way down here, but to back it up and go, oh, this is happening right now. What do I choose? Let me look out the window and see the trees and, you know, look at the person across the subway from me and just be like, oh, you know, isn't that fun? And I haven't seen that outfit before. And, you know, like...
Redirect the attention.
Just totally redirect the attention. And I found going to a neighborhood, and I was just walking around before I was meeting a friend, and just letting myself be drawn to the next place, you know, to go into. And I ended up in this place, and I ordered tea, and I just put my phone away, and I just had tea. And I was almost in tears. Because here in this, you know, city that just feels so wound up, and that's probably how I had always experienced it, there was this, you know, space, spaciousness of just... You know, people are running around, you know, the lights, it's like, it's, I mean, it's all of that can be very fun and energetic, but in that moment, it was like, how many Zen masters have been like, just have the tea, the whole universe,
yeah.
The whole universe unfolds in the teacup kind of thing. And so, so it was really fun. And it was, when I left this morning, there was kind of like, we're talking about this immense sadness of just like, I don't want this to end, and yet I don't want to cling to, you know, like, but I can see that, I, you know, ego wants to cling, or, you know, there's this sense of clinging, but letting it go and letting it be that magical thing, and now I'm going, you know, back to California, and just, I don't know, it was, well, there it is.
Yeah. It was a gift.
It was a total gift. It was a total gift. And it was a great place to just practice everything that I think we've done. Because I think that place of belonging is, for me, was what came up in this month of practice, was I could see how belonging gets derailed when there's comparison. Mm. You know, seeing other people and, oh my God, you know, people look like that? Like, wow, she's like how tall and how, you know, and he's like this and, you know, and I'm like this. And then it was just like, well, what if I can just appreciate and stop at the, wow, wow, you know, and never come back here. Never make it in relation, but just to stay in the appreciation of seeing these. Absolutely. Because there's, you know, it's every walk of life. There, that's just so diverse and so, and you see everything. And anyway,
well, I would project if I can reflect what you were saying. So it was a very present experience. It was a very present experience in that there's the ability to watch and practice with whatever is going on, and to really have a way of. I mean, I love going back to old places that I've been. Not from a place of comparison, because life offers us that opportunity to reflect how different we are.
Yes.
And how different we can be with.
Yeah.
And how the experience of being with, without a conditioned identification, how different that is as an experience.
Right? Exactly.
And then when we leave, that you can feel that sadness of, I want that. And somebody I've been reading, it was the first line of our practice thing, that happiness is our inherent nature, right? And so the desire to be happy is not wrong, mm-hmm. because it is what we are. Mm-hmm. And so the experience of a sense of presence in the absence of ego is what we all want. It's just that we're conditioned to look at it as an external circumstance rather than presence.
Yeah.
And if you're present to your sadness, which is what we were talking about with Jen, then it moves past. Because presence can't be static to anything. Because as soon as you're here in your body, in the airplane, pouring your drink and talking to the person next to you, you're present to that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens if we allow ourselves to move through the experience.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I certainly noticed that there was a melancholy. Like, the places where I would start to get caught was a melancholy of, oh, I should, you know, why didn't I have a better time when I was living here? Not like I want to move back. But more like, why didn't I, you know, really...
Best way to get out of the moment.
I mean, it was really miserable. But there was also tremendous kindness to the human to not make her go back and be in places where maybe there were places where it just wasn't fun. Like, I don't have to go visit that neighborhood again. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to go back there. At least not at this point. So,
thank you. Anyone else before we go?
So what I'm noticing is up right now is there's I have a little bit of an injury on my foot, and there's just a lot of suffering around. I don't know, just having a really hard time resting and taking care of myself and not feeling guilty for all the things I'm not doing, and I'm just noticing that that's really prevalent. And like today, I was telling a girlfriend, like, I laid on the couch and I, you know, watched the Netflix and did the stuff, and if you looked at me from the outside, you'd be like, that girl's good at resting and taking care of herself. But inside, I was like, kind of like there was. I wouldn't say I was actually feeling tortured the whole time, but I was aware of the torture.
Yeah.
So that was my experience. And when I leave here, you know, I had plans to go out tomorrow night, and I know how disappointed my partner was when I said I don't think I'm going to be well enough to go out tomorrow night. I don't think my foot's going to be healed up enough. And I said, but you go with someone else. And now I want to take that back. And be like, no, I want you to stay home and take care of me. And there's this immediate, like, visceral reaction to, no, don't, you know, like we were talking about at the beginning of the evening, don't express having needs. If you express it, and then somebody can disappoint you. And kind of what you said earlier when you said the thing about the control freak coming out because I don't want the unpredictability, I don't want the anxiety that comes along with that, there's a part of me that's like, I don't want the anxiety of even asking because there's the potential for the rejection. So that's what I'm aware of today.
So you're going to hate me, Adam. Because I'm going to ask you one question, which is, did you pick up the recorder?
I did. I did three times, okay. But I did not... Not in the way that you mean, because what I did was every morning I would pick it up again and start my 30 days all over, because I could never get past that.
Yeah, because I'll tell you that what happened to... So it's really important that you're paying attention and you're watching the torture, because you're not going to have a different experience if you're not with her. Right? I mean, that's truly only the case, that those voices are coming at you when you're injured and taking care of yourself. And even though you're on that couch, the stress level in your body is through the roof, mm-hmm. right? Because you're not that. Those voices have no interest in making you feel good or any of those things. The last time we had this conversation, I think the voices were saying exactly the same thing mm-hmm. when you decided to take a day for yourself.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, you should be doing something more productive. You know, what's wrong with you that you can't... You're such a privileged person. Why aren't you grateful for your privilege? Right. I can tell you what your voices are saying to you. Right?
And I had the same conversation, but this week there's a foot injury to go with.
That's right. Now there's cause. And then it's yelling and talking to you. Right? And so the thing that we come to is that they're not going to change. Mm. And so it's again the same conversation we had. You, if John was the name was not the name of the guy, you wouldn't know. I mean, John right. is the name of both the guys in the journals, right? That there is a way in which that doesn't change. Mm-hmm. So if we want a chance of not having to go through life with that, then we've got to replace that conversation. And so if you were lying on the couch with your recorder next to you, every time you heard the voice, you pick it up and the only reason you would do it is because you want to have a different life experience. You don't want her to go through life with those voices. You know? And so when we've suffered enough, we'll do anything to stop suffering.
Yeah.
You know? And so to take care of her. She's not having a good time.
Yeah.
And those voices are not interested in doing that. So somebody has to come in and take care of her. It's why, at some level, she wants to ask him to do that for her. Because she hasn't been taken care of. Right? And it puts that anxiety in place and the possibility of rejection and feeling at fault for disappointing your partner and then feeling at fault for being needy and then feeling bad because he wants to do what he wants to do and the karma continues.
Yeah.
So just to commit to doing that reporting to take care of her, because if she is taken care of, then you could genuinely say, you know, I know you want to go do this, and no pressure, but it would be really nice if you stayed at home. But it's not from a place of need. It's not from a karmic place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And don't take my word for it, because it's when you get to the place where you, I think we've talked about it in meditation, where you realize the benefit of coming here or the benefit of meditation. It's not concrete, it's not tangible. But you know you have a different experience when you do it. So you will. That is the motivation to continue to do it. That's the curiosity that's the curiosity with which you want to build your relationship with your recording practice.
Okay.
Because as you do it, It will assist you to know that that's what you want to do, because that's her best opportunity not to be tortured.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Dan. That was really helpful too.
Well, because what I got to see is that was exactly the motivation for me, even though I'm in the midst of it still, this workshop of going through it, recording and listening. I mean, every time I pick up the record, I'm going to do the two-handed, I didn't even see it until tonight. I hear the mentor's not going to know what to say. Mm-hmm. I hear that before every, I already done the right hand, I go to the left, and that's always there. I didn't even get to see it till now. But it's like I've seen this pattern for so long, this pattern of suffering. It's almost like I'm detachment. No one deserves that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really good to see it.
Yeah, and we get more and more chances to choose it. To choose to do it, regardless of whether or not the mentor's going to show up. Right?
Oh, right, yes.
I lose interest in whether or not, whatever it is that's going to get me, that's going to stop me.
Right, well, what I'm saying is just the experiment, just the fact of doing it, just taking the movement, the step, the picking up, whatever it is letting her, it, life know that that's the priority.
Yeah.
And it isn't that it's always a skillful recording, or whatever you would call it.
Yeah.
But
the perfect recording.
Yeah, but the evolution of the recordings has just been really fun to watch.
Yes. Well, someone once told me, right, in the Buddhist world, these are all samskaras, right? So grooves that have been built over eons and eons of time. And that movement, I mean, we're in it, we're in the groove.
Mm.
And think about, it's like a Grand Canyon, right? Years and thousands of years of following that has built this momentum towards this groove. And that's what we're going up against to pick up a recorder, to make a tiny dent in a redirect of attention to build that groove. But every time we don't do it, we're reinforcing an old groove. And so every time we do it, we're reinforcing another groove. And it becomes more and more available. So it doesn't have to be skillful. It doesn't... I just have to do it. I don't care if it's 3-second recording. That's the worst recording on the planet.
Doesn't matter.
I managed to get escape velocity, mixing all the metaphors, you know, right? Escape velocity from that groove.
Yeah.
I made a little dent in a different choice.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that came out from the mentor today is, thank you for being so courageous. And it wasn't an ego thing. I mean, it was just... Whoever is allowing that to happen, thank you for being
That's
courageous.
Right. Yeah.
Because this is not easy.
Yeah. Because even to listen to and be aware, it takes so much practice to even let the voice come in to say, pick up the recorder.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's saying, it's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Because this is saying it's not going to work.
Yeah.
At the level of attention I have to be paying to even register that little impulse to move towards what's going to save me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the momentum builds.
And the momentum builds.
And I'm assuming, just because of how we work with undulations, that it'll go down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.